So the title for today's talk is Finding Freedom Inside. A couple hundred years ago, a bunch of people living in this country thought that everything would be perfect in their country if they could just get rid of those British people. That's a joke for those of us that live here 200 years later. We often look for ways to get more freedom in our lives, in our world, in the external things around us. We go out and we get a new job, maybe one that pays a little more, has a little better schedule. Maybe we decide to move to a nicer neighborhood or a newer town, or maybe we move out into the country. Maybe we decide to find some new friends or change marriage partners. Now we feel more free. But you know, if you noticed, maybe some of you have noticed, when we find freedom in these ways, after a little while, the shiny kind of goes off of that freedom. And we find ourselves back to not feeling quite so comfortable anymore. Maybe we go look for some other external things we can change to feel better and feel more free. But of course, my point is that finding freedom that lasts is not something we find by changing things outside of us. It's something we find by changing things inside of us, freedom inside. In the Bible, Moses and then Elijah and then Jesus each go up on the mountain, in quotes, to pray and to connect with God. In those experiences, each one of them is somehow inwardly changed or transformed, to the extent that when they come back down the mountain, people notice there's something different, and they write about it. Metaphysically speaking, going up the mountain would refer to moving out of the level of human thinking and human problem solving up to a level of divine mind, a higher consciousness. In that elevated state, Moses goes up on the mountain and connects with the universal spiritual laws or spiritual principles, which he comes down and gives people as the 10 laws or the 10 commandments. When Elijah goes up the mountain, he's hiding, but he ends up connecting with God, with the power of God. But he doesn't connect with the power of God through things like the windstorm or the earthquake or the fire, big physical forces. He connects with that presence through what is termed in some translations the sound of sheer silence. Sometimes it's written as still small voice, but sheer silence is probably the better translation. And when Jesus goes up on the mountain, at one point, he encounters both Moses and Elijah, and then he is transfigured or transformed in their presence. This is seen by Peter and John and James, who are there with him. They say that his face shines like the sun and his clothes were dazzling white. He was radiant with that divine presence. Metaphysically speaking, Peter and John and James represent our divine faculties or capacities of faith, of love, of wisdom. Those things that were present in Jesus that allowed him to connect with that higher source. And those same things that are present inside us that we can cultivate to help us and support us. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus offers us a couple of words about prayer. He says, whenever you pray, don't be like the hypocrites, the actors, literally, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners so they can be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they've already received their reward. They've gotten what they were looking for. When you pray, go into your storeroom or your closet, shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, who is hidden. And the Father, who sees what is hidden, will reward you. Jesus' storeroom comment can have at least two meanings. It could mean going into a quiet place in your home. Remember, in the time of Jesus, extended families all lived in the same dwelling. So a storeroom or a closet might be the only quiet, private place you could find in the whole house. Or it could be a reference to going inside, into your inner storeroom, that inner space, where you can connect with that higher consciousness, that mountain experience. One complaint, though, that I have with our Bible and with many other spiritual texts, they don't tell us what to do once we get up on the mountain or get inside the storeroom. I assume that is probably something that at that time was taught directly by the teacher to the student and not written down in the texts. So to understand what to do, we have to look toward additional sources, the teachings of mystics from various traditions who have found their way up the mountain or into the inner storeroom and made some sort of an inner divine connection. But now, since each of these is going to be writing from their own perspective or their own spiritual tradition, an interesting thing happens. When we read their words, they may say it with different words. They may talk about what to do using different words. In fact, it may look like their ideas sometimes conflict with each other. But if we really look at them, I think you will find that most of the teachings offer some pretty similar ideas. I know before we can find any deeper or higher meaning in any kind of teaching, one of the things we need to do, at least I need to do, is quiet down a bit. A busy mind has great difficulty sensing anything of spirit, sensing anything. It's usually we get so caught up in what we're doing during the week and in the world that we miss a lot. If we try to read things then, it's going to go right by. Sometimes our mind just gets caught up in its own thinking. Ever have that happen? Just not the outside things, but the thoughts inside your head get in the way. So we need to have some ability to quiet, at least for periods of time, so that we can begin to develop a spiritual life and a prayer life. That's a prerequisite for finding freedom inside. Well, I've already been traveling some this summer. And for me, that means looking for books to take with me when I'm flying or traveling and going places. Two of my favorite little skinny books that fit into bags easily and are fun to read, or helpful to read, are by the same author. One is called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Suzuki Roshi. And another one's called Not Always So. For those of you that don't know the author, he was a Zen teacher. He was born in Japan in 1904. I didn't realize it was that long ago. Passed away in San Francisco in the early 70s. As I was reflecting on his time period, I realized he lived through two world wars in Japan as a Zen teacher. He eventually moves to San Francisco in 1959 to do just a little bit of teaching and then go back to Japan, but people responded very well, so he stayed and established the San Francisco Zen Center and the Tassajara Mountain Center near the coast. His approach to Zen and meditation, which is what interests me, of course, is pretty simple and pretty humble. He notes that around that same time, many Zen teachers came to the West, as he puts it, with new suits and shiny shoes. He comments that he came with an old robe and a shiny head. The books are little collections of short talks that he gave to his students after their weekly meditation sessions. That's part of why I enjoy using them for travel. It's little short readings that you can enjoy. The title, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, comes from a Japanese word, shoshin, that translates as beginner's mind. And in their Zen tradition, they say that in the mind of the beginner, there are many possibilities. In the mind of the expert, only a few. That's a reminder. It's a reminder, if we want to open up to the limitless possibilities of the universe, we need to cultivate not the mind of the expert, but the mind of the beginner. The mind of the beginner. The meditation they teach is very simple. It's similar to what we do. Sitting upright, they actually have recommended postures, but I don't worry about that too much. Sitting upright, hands folded, eyes closed, and then following the breath. Just following the breath and noticing whatever arises inside us. There's no setting of a prayer intention for the meditation. There's no setting of a goal for the meditation. Just sitting and noticing what shows up quietly and without judgment. I'm going to share a couple short excerpts from a couple of his teachings that I thought you might enjoy. The first one is on what he calls waves in the mind. The first two sentences are probably the most important. When you are practicing Zazen, that's what they call their meditation. When you are practicing Zazen meditation, do not try to stop your thinking. Let it stop by itself. If something comes into your mind, let it come in and let it go. It will not stay long. When you try to stop your thinking, it means you're bothered by it. Do not be bothered by anything. It appears as if something comes from outside your mind, but actually it is only waves in your mind. If you are not bothered by the waves, gradually they will become calmer and calmer. In 5 or 10 minutes at most, your mind can become completely serene and calm. At that time, your breathing will become quite slow, while your pulse will become a little faster. It will take quite a long time before you find your calm, serene mind in this practice. Many sensations will come, many thoughts or images will arise, but they're just waves in your own mind. Nothing comes from outside your mind. Usually we think of our mind as receiving impressions or experiences from outside, but that's not a true understanding of our mind. The true understanding is that the mind includes everything. When you think something comes from outside, it means only that something appears in your mind. And nothing outside yourself can cause you trouble. You yourself make the waves in your mind. If you leave your mind as it is, it will become calm. This is called big or expanded mind. If your mind is focused on something outside itself, that mind is small, limited mind. Do not try to stop your own thinking. And here's a little section on control and freedom, which is part of what made me think of freedom as a theme for today. He starts off by commenting on painting. Nowadays, traditional Japanese painting has become pretty formal and lifeless. That's why modern art has developed. Ancient painters used to practice putting dots on paper in artistic disorder. This is very difficult. Even though you try to do it, usually what you do is arranged in some kind of order. It is the same with taking care of your daily life. You think you can control it, but you cannot. It is almost impossible to arrange your dots out of order. The same is true with taking care of your daily life. Even though you try to put people under some control, it is impossible. You cannot do it. The best way to control people is to encourage them to be mischievous. Then they will be under control in its widest sense. To give your sheep or your cow a large, spacious meadow is the way to control him. So it is with people. First, let them do what they want and watch them. This is the best policy. To ignore them is not good. That is the worst policy. The second worst is to try to control them. The best one is to watch them. Just watch them without trying to control them. The same works for yourself as well. If you want to obtain perfect calmness in your meditation, you should not be bothered by the various images you find in your mind. Let them come and let them go. Then they will be under control. But this policy is not easy. It sounds easy, but it requires some special effort. How to make this kind of effort is the secret of the practice. Suppose you're sitting under some extraordinary or difficult circumstance. If you try to calm your mind, you will be unable to sit. If you try not to be disturbed, your efforts will not be right. The only effort that can help you might be to count your breathing. 1, 2, 1, 2. Or to concentrate on your inhaling and exhaling. We say concentration, but to concentrate the mind on something is not really the purpose. The true purpose is to see things as they are, to observe things as they are, and to let everything go as it goes. This is to put everything under control in its widest sense. Zen practice is to open up our small mind. So concentrating is just an aid to help us realize big mind, or the mind that is everything. If you want to discover the true meaning of Zen in your everyday life, you have to understand the meaning of keeping your mind on your breathing and holding your body in the right upright position. You should follow the rules of practice, and your study should become subtle and careful. Only in this way can you begin to experience what he calls the vital freedom of Zen. To give your sheep or your cow a spacious meadow is the best way to control them. So it is with people. So it is with our minds and our thoughts. Don't ignore them. That's the worst way. Just watch them. Pay attention. And as we do, understanding will begin to arise over time. And as that big mind or expanded mind understanding arises, we begin to see more and more of what really is. Only then can we begin to clearly know how to respond or how to react or what changes to make. Perhaps some form of compassion or inner healing will arise in us. Perhaps with our new understanding, we'll see that no response is really necessary. Perhaps from a place of greater quiet, we'll begin to understand what we actually need to be praying for or about. We all want more freedom in our lives, every one of us. So we try a new job. We try a new neighborhood or a new town. We look for some new friends, maybe a new relationship partner. These kinds of things help some, at least for a while. But as we strive for more and more and greater external freedom, we often find that we're really not free where it counts the most. Inside. Inside. That's the time to, as I would paraphrase the Course in Miracles, to be still. And forget all the things you've ever learned and all the thoughts you've ever had and every preconception you hold about what the world's about. Just to let it go. To stop remembering your ideas of what things are for. To let every thought be loosened from your mind and swept away. To become innocent of judgment of anything, whether you think it's good or bad. Simply go into that inner closet, that inner storeroom, and begin just following your breathing. To be still for a little while and see, with a bit of practice, how far you rise above the world, how far up the mountain you go, when you release your mind from the chains that you and I have put upon it. As the Course says, your mind will be grateful to be free for a while. In moments of quiet, we have the opportunity to go up the mountain and to free our minds and to begin to actually find real freedom. I put a little affirmation in the back of today's bulletin, just a reminder of something that's true. And it simply says, I am spirit and light. I am always free. Let's say that together. Together we say, I am spirit and light. I am always free. And again, I am spirit and light. I am always free. One more time. I am spirit and light. I am always free. Close your eyes and see how that feels inside. To know yourself, not as a person or a personality or a body that is progressing through time, but to know yourself as spirit, as light. To perhaps begin to know yourself as our Creator knows us, as spirit, as light. Totally free. Free from time, free from limits. Free from being bothered by the external things. Free. Free in every moment. There's no reason to try to chase the British out of your country or anyone or anything else. There's no reason to try to control the little thoughts that just wander through the mind. Just let them wander through. It's not who you are. You are. We are. Spirit. We are divine light shining forth in this form. We were created free. We have always been free. And we always will be. It is who and what we are. So let's open our eyes and share that affirmation together again. Together we say, I am spirit and light. I am always free. One more time. I am spirit and light. I am always free. And so it is. You'll find that little affirmation in the back of today's